Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we are joined by Martha Voshinska and Joey Mattingly. Martha is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and an expert on drug policy and healthcare economy, while Joey is an associate professor of pharmacotherapy and vice chair of research at the University of Utah College of Pharmacy. Today, we are going to be discussing the impact of U.S. tariffs on the pharmaceutical market. More specifically, we'll be delving into the duo's most recent research published in places such as the Brookings Institute and the Harvard Business Review. Can we start by discussing how the U.S. typically sources its prescription drugs?
Sure. So maybe I will start. So where drugs come from, where they're made, really depends on the type of the drug. Most of the drugs that we take are generics. In the retail sector, more than 90% of volume are generic drugs. They are responsible for a much smaller share of spending. So we use generics but pay for brands. If you look at those drugs, they are very heavily sourced from India. Volume-wise, about almost two-thirds of volume for solid oral dose products that are generic come from India. You do have also a relatively large presence of Europe. If you move towards sterile injectables that are generic, you have a much bigger presence of the U.S., actually, which I think might be surprising for your listeners. But that's partly because so much of the volume are things like saline, and that is actually made domestically. It's just too heavy, too expensive to ship, so it's actually made sense to make it in the U.S. And for branded drugs, it's really U.S. versus Europe. There's not much of a footprint anywhere else for the finished dosage form and also for the active pharmaceutical ingredient. The caveat is, and the listeners probably have heard just how much exposure we have to China. The exposure to China is really in the upstream. Any drug that's chemically synthesized, so every generic, it's a small molecule, the key starting materials and auxiliary chemicals, the reagents, solvents, etc., those are pretty much guaranteed to be coming from China. So it depends which drug type and also where in the supply chain we're talking about.
Awesome. Cool. So obviously, like you said, it can vary for all different types of drugs and products, but I'm glad we kind of have that basis of where these drugs are really coming from. Awesome. So kind of moving over to what we're here to discuss today, which is the potential for U.S. tariffs on pharmaceuticals. So what are the potential benefits that the Trump administration is aiming for by imposing tariffs on prescription drug products?
So maybe I'll answer it in two ways. One is how tariffs are supposed to work. And I will comment with where I do think they could work effectively. And then probably we're going to get into where they might not go over so well. So the idea is as follows. Imagine that you have a drug that's being made in the United States and outside of the United States. And right now, the foreign manufacturer has a cost advantage. If you impose a tariff on them, that will push their prices up. And so the consumers or buyers will shift towards the domestic producer. So the domestic producer will get a larger market share. They potentially could increase their price as long as they're still competitive relative to the foreign competitors. They will have an incentive to expand their production. And this brings in jobs. This, potentially de-risks our supply chains from adversaries. So that's the general concept. Where this, and we'll dig into it a little bit more, where this breaks down is that it takes number one, you already have to have manufacturers here to protect. It works much better that way. Or entry has to be very easy, and that's just not the case. But there are certain settings where a tariff can work quite well. And the example that I frequently give are syringes. So if you think about syringes, I mean, to administer any drug that comes in a vial, you need a syringe, right? And if you look at just how critical syringes are, I once did an analysis or sort of we identified that 89% of inpatients get a drug that comes in a vial. If you don't have syringes, 91% of inpatients will not be able to get treatment. So this is a massive footprint and potentially a major national security risk, right? Especially when you see that what has been happening is that during COVID, China dramatically expanded their capacity for making syringes. And we used to have, I think, 4 or 5 domestic manufacturers in the U.S. making syringes. And basically, we got left with 1 because everybody else was driven out of the market because China post-COVID started to dump their product on the market. And at the same time, FDA issued a warning to providers saying, be careful about the Chinese syringes. We're seeing problems with them. And so you look at something like this and you're like, we can't have this set up, right? We need to redirect buyers towards domestic syringes. And so the Biden administration put on a tariff on syringes, which since then, because of tariffs on China, got increased. And that actually restored production of all those facilities that not too long ago shut down. So we actually have now a pretty robust supply of syringes that are made domestically. And that is a positive. They are more expensive, but there's a clear value to this. So there are situations where a tariff could work. And I would say that the syringes are a great example of that.
Awesome. Cool. So that sets kind of the basis of where kind of tariffs would come in with pharmaceuticals. So wrapping back around, you mentioned that we use generics and we spend on brands. How would you expect these trends to change if tariffs are imposed on pharmaceutical goods?
So we still will spend on brands and use generics, but I definitely do think that tariffs would play out very differently for brands than generics. Well, I should say one thing. I mean, it really matters what kinds of tariffs are imposed, right? If you impose a tariff on India, it's not going to affect brands basically at all, right? If you impose tariffs on China, we actually, by the way, have currently a 20% tariff on Chinese pharmaceuticals because of tariffs that were put on across the board on Chinese product early in the administration. So again, the impact is going to be different. But one thing to keep in mind is that brands have a very different ability to absorb tariffs, absorbed into their margins. So the big question is, to what extent can they pass on the cost? And if they can't, can they absorb it? For brands, there's a big question of whether they would be passing on the cost. If they were to pass on the cost, clearly we're going to pay a lot more because a 25% tariff on a $10,000 drug is a lot of money. So if branded manufacturers are passing on the tariffs, that's going to be very, very visible. But even if they are not going to pass on the tariffs, and we can get into it why they might not, they have the ability to absorb it. Could be, you know, a $9,900 margin on a $10,000 drug when you look at actually cost of production versus the marginal cost of production versus the price that is being charged. I've been really concerned is that we might end up with shortages of certain types of generics. And here it's because they might be limited in their ability to pass on the price. So let's say that you have a $4 generic, very typical, right? And the, you know, tariff is going to be 25%. That's a dollar. It seems like it's not a big deal. But what if that generic only had a 50-cent profit margin, right? So now, okay, if they don't pass on the tariff, if they have to basically absorb it, that product is going to be unprofitable, right? So there's sort of a big question of where they might be able to pass on the cost. And this is where you run into the various, to some extent, contracts. So in the retail setting, it's easier to pass on the cost because a lot of the retail drugs are sold based on, it's really a spot market. Wholesalers have, and large pharmacy chains, they have bids. On the hospital side, you actually see contracts. The group purchasing organizations might have 1 to 3 year contracts that will tie the manufacturer to a particular price. So that's one piece. Another piece is the Medicaid program. and the spillover to the 340B program. So under Medicaid, any prescription that is sold to a Medicaid patient, there needs to be an inflation rebate, not only the mandatory rebate, but also an inflation rebate added, right? And the inflation rebate is over the consumer price index. Right now, the consumer price index is 2.4%. A 25% tariff is 10 times as much. So imagine amoxicillin. Amoxicillin is probably heavily used by Medicaid patients, right? It's sold to kids. A lot of kids are in Medicaid. What you're going to see is if you're a foreign manufacturer of amoxicillin, suddenly you can increase the price on part of your market, maybe half a market, maybe less. But for the rest of it, you have to basically absorb it beyond the 2.4%. So, and similarly for the 340B program, which on the sterile injectable side, hospital side, that also reflects, 340B program reflects the Medicaid inflation rebates. So it's basically the same mechanism on that side. So the kinds of drugs where I would be concerned about manufacturing really being challenged on their profits and profitability would be in particular cancer drugs, because they have a really large exposure to the 340B program. So my big worry is, on the generic side, is that we actually won't see prices increase enough, that prices will not be able to increase. And as a result, manufacturers are just going to walk away. And the markets are not resilient. We can't build facilities overnight. You know, the manufacturer might leave, you know, in a couple of weeks after they sell their inventory, and we might wait 5 years for a new facility to be built. So that's my big concern.
Obviously, it's very complex, just the interplay of what manufacturers will do and then plan sponsors and all of that if this were to happen. So obviously, it's very in flux right now, but it's important, and it's important for everyone in the industry to kind of be aware of. So moving aside to one of those players within the industry, pharmacists. So as pharmacists are often the direct point of contact for patients' medication needs, what challenges do you anticipate pharmacists will face in their daily practice if pharmaceutical tariffs are widely implemented?
Yeah, I can jump in on this if you'd like. Pharmacists are paid by patients can pay cash directly at the counter without using their insurance. But if they use their insurance, they're essentially a fee-for-service contractor that gets, you know, a small amount, like a copayment upfront in cash from the patient. And then they wait 30, 60 days or whatever the contract is for the reimbursement for their insurance. That's a contracted price. And pharmacy contracts, particularly for brands, are typically really based on the average wholesale price, a function of that. So like AWP minus a percentage. Similarly with generics, it may be AWP minus, but a much larger percentage, or it could also be, they could be using a maximum allowable cost formula or MAC pricing, which basically what it does is, it for lisinopril, like a generic blood pressure medication, there may be 150 different NDCs or national drug codes, different strengths and manufacturers, maybe 20, 30 manufacturers making that drug. Payers don't want to incentivize the pharmacy to pick the most expensive lisinopril product, right? So they're going to say, okay, for lisinopril, we're only going to pay this top price amount. If the tariffs impact the whole pricing underneath in terms of what the pharmacists are paying on their acquisition cost, there's not a mechanism in their current contract to alleviate that, or that typically would not. For a cash paying patient, potentially, the pharmacy just changes its usual and customary price, its cash price, right? So, and of course, then pharmacies are a very competitive market. There's nearly 70,000 outpatient pharmacies across the U.S. So it'll be difficult if like one pharmacy has to increase its prices and another pharmacy absorbs it, right? So then imagine that actually kind of gives an advantage to, you know, the bigger groups that can absorb the price hit versus those that say, gosh, I just got to pass this price on to my customer. So yeah, I think in the short run, this is going to be, impactful in terms of pharmacists figuring out are their margins going to shrink for different drugs, and how might it impact across brands versus generics? There could be differentials there, but I definitely think, I think to Marta's point is that it's not like we have a list of U.S.-based generic drug manufacturers that we can just shift to really quickly, especially if all 60, 70,000 pharmacies all start shifting to those U.S.-based manufacturers right away, like then those drugs will be on short supply.
by the way, brings up, you know, takes us back to the drug shortages. You know, another thing that pharmacists might have to deal with is actually shortages of products, right? And I really do hope we don't end up in a situation where pharmacists end up saying, I'm just not going to carry this drug because I'm losing money on it. So I'm just not going to carry it at all rather than lose money. So that's another possibility that I hope is not going to happen. But that, in a sense, you know, if there is a tariff, somebody is going to have to absorb it. Somebody is going to have to pay for it. And the question, who is it going to be? Is it going to be the manufacturer? Does it get passed through to the pharmacy? How much can the pharmacy pass it through to the payer, or for that matter, to the patient? So it's going to be absorbed somewhere. And because of how contracts are structured in the solid oral dose market, less pressure is going to be on the manufacturer, unless it's Medicaid program, and more actually on the pharmacy having to, until the contracts get renegotiated, or they might have some escape clauses in contracts where they could pass on that increased acquisition cost, they might have to absorb it.
Awesome. Yeah. So I think that was a great overview of kind of what pharmacists kind of will experience if these were to go through. So I think that would be a good segue into kind of looking toward the future really quick. So how should pharmacy locations prepare for potential downfall spurring from future pharmaceutical tariffs? So despite current tariffs considerably avoiding the pharmaceutical market as of now, should pharmacists be raising alarms for the implementation of tariffs in the future?
Yeah, so I do think pharmacists need to be vocal, at least explaining their position, because pharmacists are often not the lawyer in these markets. And when we're talking about this, like we often hear of the pay, like the insurance companies, the pharmacies themselves are relatively small, like from a general, you know, lobbying perspective, and their voices may not be as loud. The one nice thing is that most congressmen, you know, they pharmacists in their district. So I think it's important that pharmacists explain that they're concerned at least in the short term, and if their contracts can't allow for them to make up for the increased acquisition costs that they face. They certainly would want to, you know, I don't know if at this stage you could really say a lot to your patient at this point, you know, other than just, you know, trying to answer as best you can, have good relationships with your wholesaler, and then maybe a secondary wholesaler. A lot of pharmacies don't just contract with one wholesaler, but maybe they use two in case one, you know, is out of the product and the other one has it or can get it. So it's, you know, thinking about purchasing. I do think that, you know, smaller pharmacies are probably at a disadvantage in terms of their overall like amount of staffing and support that they have, whereas, you know, CVS that has an entire group, you know, for procurement in Woonsocket, Rhode Island, and their headquarters, you know, or like the large companies have teams of people that may be working on this stuff, where smaller groups may be reliant on like a buying group, a purchasing group, or something like that. So, you know, just trying to stay active in your pharmacy organization. So you have the National Community Pharmacists Association for independent owners, as well as the American Pharmacists Association. Both those groups are quite active. For the hospital folks, the American Society of Health Systems pharmacists obviously is a great resource to advocate. But at this point, I do think we're probably having to be reactionary. I mean, we're probably having to say, okay, what is this actually going to look like? What's the final thing going to look like? Is it going to be differential for different countries? You know, and that's going to play like, those are just things that we don't teach in pharmacy school. We don't teach you, oh, this drug is from Israel, this drug is from India. You know, like we don't spend, you know, we talk about the quality, you know, we talk about the therapeutic use of the drugs, but we certainly aren't training our pharmacists to come out and be logistics experts. So a lot of it's just maybe, you know, try to stay engaged in your organization so you can get the best up-to-date information. And then, I think it is probably reasonable to suggest pharmacists, if they have the opportunity to talk with their legislators, to just say, you know, we may need more time to adjust, you know, if they're, you know, there's been discussions about tariffs being delayed at times. And so if pharmaceuticals can have a little bit more planning, a little bit more runway might be beneficial.
So if I could just add to this, I mean, I agree with everything Joey said. The window for engaging with the Trump administration is closing rapidly. We don't know when tariff announcements might come in. They could happen this week. Next week, it could be still a couple of months. It's really hard to tell. But that window is rapidly changing. But I definitely would say have a look at your contracts and start thinking ahead about how to negotiate for when the tariffs are here so that you don't have yet another cycle, another full year of a contract where you're at a disadvantage. So try to sort of get it ahead and try to build for the next cycle, even if you can't do anything about this cycle.
Well, I think this has been a great conversation, kind of touching on what pharmaceutical tariffs would do in the overarching industry and more specifically for pharmacists. So obviously it's very in flux right now. We'll hopefully everyone can kind of keep their eyes on this amid everything else that's going on in the industry and healthcare as a whole. But yeah, I really appreciate you guys taking the time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us over.
Yeah, thank you.
For sure. Thank you so much.